you lost a survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to this week's edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm your host, David Bloomberg, and I hate boat rides in rough water, though probably not nearly as much as Pat does. With me, as always, is my co-host who has, well, probably been on that same exact boat and perhaps even worse weather, Jessica Lewis.
Hey there, David Bloomberg. Thank you so much for joining us today. And yes, as far as those boat rides are concerned, I have probably been on that same boat. And I have to say, I think I might have been in worse weather, but I don't know. I obviously didn't end up with a back injury, but I did get an eye infection during the cyclone that hit our beach when they were taking us away in the boat. That was when I got hit in the eye with a piece of sand. I couldn't see the entire boat ride. So needless to say, I suffered an injury too, but prior to getting on a boat and went through hell riding on those boats in that cyclone. So I can totally feel for you, Pat. Those are rough, rough rides to take. So poor Pat, I feel really awful for him having to go through all of that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to guess that your weather was worse just because you were actually evacuated.
Yeah. Yeah. It was horrifying. It was horrifying. And it's obviously, I know that the captains of those boats, they really do try to do their damnedest to keep everybody safe. But sometimes you just can't. You can't help it. I mean, it's weather and it's huge waves and you're really just hoping for the best when you get on those boats. We actually had one person from my tribe, Rachel. She like fell under a boat before tribal council one day. It was horrible. And she was, the poor girl was drenched head to toe, but she literally got sucked under the boat just because a wave came up, hit her the wrong way. And, you know, she went under the boat. So you never know what's going to happen because it's nature and it's very unpredictable. And you've very small boats with a whole lot of people being crammed inside. So poor, poor Pat. I mean, it's really, what an awful way to go out. Absolutely horrible way to go out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, not to make light of his situation in any way, but as you might imagine, we've had a number of people asking how we were going to do this podcast because of
that. I know. And I think that we can't handle it, you know, that we would.
Yeah.
What was it? That it would be an open and shut case, I believe, is what Stephen Fishback might have said.
So. Yeah. Rob was saying on Know It Alls, we might have a tough one. And Stephen was like, well, I think they'll have no problem at all, you know. Yeah. And, you know, but today is International Podcast Day, and so we're not going to skip, you know, and really, both Rob and Stephen were right. It's easy to say Pat lost because of being medevac, but more difficult to make the podcast out of it.
Mm-hmm.
On a normal week, we go through my rules to look at how the player who was voted off did in terms of each one, and that obviously doesn't apply here, but we do have a plan for these sorts of situations, and we've done this before. Which is that although nobody was voted out, we still discuss how the person who was injured had done throughout their time in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But that normally presumes they've had some time in the game. And so that means this time we have a really special case. But, you know, we've got a format. We'll follow our usual path and we'll see where it takes us.
Yeah, and we do have some things to talk about in relationship to Pat, I must say, because though his time was short, he gave us one hell of a show. So I do think we're going to have some things to address.
Yeah. You know, and also, usually we talk about the other things that were going on the episode anyway before we get to the rules. And this week is no different, of course. There were several players who caught my attention, including both of our winner picks.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, neither of them came off, you know, totally great there. So,
I know. I took comfort in the fact that my winner pick was not looking too good because your winner pick was also not looking too good. So I was secretly like, okay with it. I was like, all right, at least we're both in the same, I'll say it, boat.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so I'll start with my pick, Nick. Yeah, he did stand out for drawing attention to himself as you know, supposedly being lazy. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that more when we get to our discussion about Pat, because they are related. But what I want to point out is Nick's statement during the episode when he said, "The only thing on my mind is scheming and plotting."
Dun, dun, dun. And
yes, considering that we know he listens to RHAP and the podcast here, I'm going to consider this a shout out. And thanks, Nick. We appreciate it.
That's a great shout out to have. And also, I mean, I know we're not talking about Nick, but I do think that Nick, it's clear that he was paying attention to the rules because he saw the situation that he was in and went, "Oh shit, I better fix this real quick because mm-hmm. it's not looking too good for me." So he was very aware of the circumstances. And he was very flexible and try to change things up. But we'll talk about Nick when he goes home, right, Bloomberg?
When he wins.
No, not when he wins.
So now I also noticed that in the final first one out, Nick said he didn't want to be too strong or too weak. And, you know, since Appendix A talks about weak, you know, voting out the weak and the strong and the weak and the strong, I almost consider this a shout out too, but I think it's a little too obscure. So I'll just be happy with the scheming and plotting one. But maybe I, you know, implanted a subliminal hint about, you know, since they vote out the weak and the strong, you don't want to be too weak or too strong. So.
Yeah, well, he was I don't even know what you would call it. He was trying to be middle of the road,
work.
But
yes.
Yes, avoiding work. I don't know if that can be deemed as weak, but it certainly doesn't make you look strong. So
different,
you know, he wiggled into the middle, maybe.
All right. So now let's talk about your winner pick, Natalie.
I know. Natalie, listen, this is what I said. When I picked Natalie, I knew either she's going to get out there, and if she can survive the first couple of votes, she's going to do amazing. But she's got to get past those first couple of votes because she is your typical first one out, older female who's, you know, not as physically fit as some of the others. You know, we talked about all of this fact that they cast a 56-year-old woman. I thanked CBS for doing it because I thought it was incredible. But it's a huge risk. But I will say this. She came across too strong. She shouldn't have been barking orders the way that she was, especially if she wasn't going to back it up with doing some of the work. However, I think she still has some good ground because we can certainly talk about what I think is going to happen later. Like, we can mm-hmm. save that. But I think that she's got some life left in her because of the people that are on her tribe. I think she's going to be able to pull through. I really do.
Okay. Yeah. You know, the thing that gets me is not just that we knew she could easily be the first one out, but she knew it too.
Yes, yes.
And so we thought she would fight against that, but instead she drew more attention to herself and made herself more likely to be targeted.
Yes.
I think a lot of us were just sitting there going, "What is she thinking?"
Yes. Like, you know, maybe I should have taken some hint from Wiggler's first one out when he talked specifically about Natalie just kind of standing off of the distance looking at everybody. And I read it wrong. When he said it, I thought, okay, maybe she just kind of, she's taking it in, she's sizing things up. No, from what the episode showed, she was just kind of staring everybody down and making them feel uncomfortable. At least that's what we saw. However, right. I will say this. We only saw a few people complaining about it, not the whole tribe complaining about it. Which I thought was an interesting point that there seems to be a group little core that are getting annoyed, but maybe there's good things on the horizon for her. I hope there is, because I'm horrible at this. I'm so bad at predictions.
You know, one good thing on the horizon is that whatever Natalie has been doing, at least it's not as bad as Mike disappearing for long enough that it became a running joke while he was out looking for an idol. It's like he was trying to make my prediction of him being the first out of Goliath come true.
Yeah, I know. And here's the thing, too. I have to comment about Natalie and Mike, because there was some talk out there on the Instagram and Twitter world and podcasting world that her going to Mike and kind of forewarning him that people are looking at him and he's screwing up basically because he's out looking for an idol. That was a bad call on her part, because obviously if he can be the focus instead of her, then she should have kind of pushed him over the edge and been like, yeah, let's focus on Mike. But maybe she realizes she could use Mike to her advantage. I don't know. You know, that like if she sees that he's on the outs, he's going to need somebody. So maybe she can bring him into her inner circle and utilize him. I don't know. Maybe that's what her thought was, because normally if someone is the focus, yeah, you're like, keep the focus on him. So who knows? Yeah.
I mean, if her inner circle is only the two of them, that's not going to help very much.
Well, and that's why I'm saying we only saw
a
few people complaining about her. And I still think that there's enough people on her tribe that they might get tired with the showmance stuff so early and the young, beautiful women who are hanging out with Dan. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're going to look at that.
Most of them are young and beautiful. So, you know, you may be right. And actually, you know, I wanted to talk about Dan and Kara next, because obviously, you know, that showmance aspect is bad for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Something tells me it won't really blossom into anything, whether that something is Instagram or, or whether it's just, you know, the way she was kind of backing off from him a little bit. But, you know, the thing I wonder about is if Dan telling the women about the idol will end up coming back to haunt him.
Well, and that's what I think could end up happening with Dan and that whole group is you get cocky, you know, how suddenly he has an idol and he's hanging out with you. I mean, he's very, obviously he loves that he's playing this game and he loves what he has become and turned himself into. He's very proud of himself. But I think that being so proud on the island might not bode too well for him. And I think that that's how it's going to come across, that he's too proud and he's too, I don't really know what the right word is for it, but there's just something that's very off-putting about it, that he's kind of boastful in a way. And I don't know if that's what's going to come across to the other tribe members. And now that he has an idol, if it becomes that much more, and maybe those girls will not like it and turn against him because they know he has an idol. It'll be an interesting thing to watch. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I do, on a more positive note, I do want to recognize the early puzzle queen, Allison at Goliath, and her corresponding puzzle king, Christian, over in the David tribe. I have a feeling we'll be seeing them battling each other at the end of challenges time and time again.
Yes. I'm worried for Christian, though. I was worried for Christian before, and I'm still worried for him because he really has put himself out there, not only as extremely good at puzzles, but then to talk about how he's actually created algorithms for solving slide puzzles. I hope there was some very big red flags going up for people when they heard that this guy's going to kick all of our asses when it comes to, you know, solving puzzles. So perhaps we should keep our eye on him. I don't know. I love him, though. He was very enjoyable to watch. But that was one of those moments where you're like, oh, maybe you shouldn't have shared that bit of information with everyone.
No, I don't know. I mean, you know, certainly we often say if you're going to volunteer to do the puzzle aspect on a challenge, especially early on, you better be damn sure that you can do it. Now, he was
absolutely
put in that spot without even volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
But once he was there, he can easily say, hey, I'm the puzzle king.
Yes. And I agree with that, that if you're going to say it, you better actually perform. Then you better do well if you're going to put yourself out there. I just don't know if he's now even shined a bigger light on himself, because there's one thing to have everybody know that you're good at puzzles. There's another thing for people to know that you have spent time actually creating algorithms to become better at doing puzzles, you know, where that's like a step above that. I don't think anyone in Survivor history has ever said, this is what I do in my spare time, you know, that I create these algorithms for solving puzzles. But good for him if it works and it keeps him in there. He's very fun to watch. So that would definitely be, I would enjoy watching a season with him all the way through.
Yeah. So besides Christian, of course, on the David tribe, I like that Carl realized right away he couldn't be, you know, the laid back kind of guy that seemed to be his original game plan and overall personality. But rather, he had to actually start making alliances. I'm interested to see where that goes.
Me too, because I love Carl. I loved him before, and I do love that he is realizing very quickly that he has to play this game differently than he had anticipated, which shows to me he's a good player. He's already thinking about the game. He's making changes that he needs to make immediately. And he's forging relationships with people, which is fantastic. So I think the combination of him appearing to be kind of laid back, but then also making these relationships and connections with people is really going to carry him far. I am so excited about Carl. I think if he wins, because he would have been my winner pick if I could have picked a David, but I couldn't. So I will be so excited for him, because I think we're going to see a lot of great things from Carl, because he has so many, just really good qualities about him that I think can get him. He can maneuver through the game very, very well, because he's already doing so. He started out strong. So I think this will be good for him. I'm excited for Carl.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, then we had two other pairings on David that we saw. There was the alliance of opposites with Lyrsa and Elizabeth, and the alliance of similar types with Gabby and Christian.
Yes. So excited about both of those duos as well.
Yeah. So, you know, all of those players were showing some early flexibility, which, of course, I like to see. And speaking of flexibility, this is a good time to mention this week's sponsor, Simple Contacts, because they allow you to be more flexible with the way you get your contacts, and they make the process quicker. Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. You might be thinking, isn't buying contacts already simple? And sadly, the answer is no. It's actually pretty cumbersome. There's a law in the U.S. that requires anyone who wears contacts to have a new prescription written every year in order to be able to buy lenses, even if your vision hasn't changed for years and years and you have perfectly healthy eyes.
Yeah, and that's true, because I've actually been wearing contacts for over 15 years. And the most frustrating part is the necessity to renew my prescription every year in order to get more contacts. Even though my prescription might not have changed, I still have to do that. So it's expensive because you have to pay for an exam, and it's time consuming. And most of the time, I have to actually take time off from work, because the eye doctors are usually open 9 to 5 during the week. So I don't get even a Saturday option. So it costs extra for the contacts lens fitting, which again is also kind of ridiculous, because you've been wearing the same contacts for years and they have to make sure they still work for you. So I tried Simple Contacts and I actually managed to avoid all of that. I literally took an eye exam standing in my basement using my phone, and I'm not even kidding. All I needed to do was register on my phone, which included information about my previous prescription, and it just took a few minutes, and then I started the exam. The camera on my phone actually checked the redness in my eye, and then it had me stand. I had to basically stand 10 feet away from my phone, which your phone will measure and will tell you if you are the right length away. And then you go through and you actually have the eye exam on your phone. The process was quick, and I found out the next day that my exam had been reviewed and my prescription was renewed. Now, my husband, who also wears contacts and has been wearing them forever as well, could not believe that this is the process that I went through. And actually, a friend of mine at work, the same thing, and he's actually using Simple Contacts because he was so blown away that you could actually do this process this way. So listeners, you can do this too. And you can actually save $30 on your lenses by going to simplecontacts.com/survivor20 or entering the code survivor20 at checkout. So it's pretty much a one-stop shop. You register, order, and take your test all at one time. It is super convenient.
Yeah, there are a million things demanding your time. Contact lenses shouldn't be one of them. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes. The process is designed by doctors, and licensed ophthalmologists review every test carefully to make sure your eyes look healthy and that your vision hasn't changed. This isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts if your vision hasn't changed. Simple Contacts has all the brands and types of lenses you're familiar with, and Simple Contacts has been rated 5 stars over 3,000 times on the App Store. And it sounds to me like you would give it 5 stars as well.
I actually did, David Bloomberg. So, yeah. Totally worth it.
All right. So listeners, remember, if you're interested, go to simplecontacts.com/survivor20 or enter code Survivor20 at checkout so you can save $30 on your lenses at Simple Contacts. Again, that's simplecontacts.com/survivor20 or enter the code Survivor20 at checkout. All right, now it's time to move to the main part of the podcast. As I was watching on Wednesday night, I wondered why, as we were going to the immunity challenge, we hadn't seen nearly as much on David as we had on Goliath in terms of who was in the most danger. I thought it meant Goliath would lose the challenge. That was my prediction on Twitter at the time. But what it really meant was there wasn't going to be a tribal council, so they didn't need to delve as much into what was going on over at the David tribe. It also happens to make things a little more difficult for us, but hey, that's not going to stop us.
That's true. We're powering through.
That's right, because although we know it was a boat ride that knocked Pat out of the game, we'll still talk about why Pat lost.
In addition to the boat ride.
Yes, yes. The first and most important rule, of course, is to scheme and plot. You know, the one that Nick mentioned. We didn't exactly see a whole lot of Pat doing this, but he did tell interviewers that he thought he was in a great position. In the final first one out, he talked about what would have happened if he'd made it back to camp, saying, "The game was mine. The game is built for me." And he's said in all his interviews that he was in a solid alliance. Specifically, he told Josh that he knows he was safe if they had gone to tribal council because he had a solid five, including himself, Gabby, Jess, Carl, and Davey, with the added hopes of Christian and Lyrsa. He also talked about the solid five in his post-game interviews on Thursday. The problem is that in the recent interviews, he switched Gabby and Lyrsa in his solid five, which raises a little bit of a red flag with me and tells me his situation might not have been as solid as he was saying. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't mean to nitpick, but not remembering who was in your solid five tells me it might not have been so solid.
Well, and how about the fact, too? I'm sorry, I'm jumping in here. But the fact that one of the people that you claim is in your solid five, Carl, is having conversations with, I believe, Davey about how annoying you're being and how, like, that dude's basically got to go because he's just rubbing everybody the wrong way. So there might have been, maybe he was putting more emphasis on the five than the other five people actually were.
Yeah, I mean, both Carl and Davey were supposedly in that five, and they were having, you know, they were talking about voting Pat out after he built the shelter. You know, I don't know. I mean, we don't know the timing of it, too. But
right.
But the other problem, like you just said, is we don't know if it's true. And I'm not suggesting he's lying because I'm quite certain he believed it.
Oh,
even
yeah.
If he got some of the details wrong. What I'm saying is that lots of people have been voted out while thinking they were in the majority.
Yes. And I'm sorry. I'm just excited about this. I'm excited about
spot. I think I know where you're going because he may have believed he was in a solid alliance, but that doesn't mean everyone else was as solid as he was. And I think you found yourself in a similar situation at one point.
Yes. You know, it's one of those funny things when you're being told one thing over here from someone who's supposed to be like your number one, and then they're secretly conniving to get rid of you over here with everybody else. So, yes, I know exactly what this is like. It really makes you have to pay attention to everything. And I think that, you know, Pat might have been suffering what I was suffering from, is you kind of put blinders on because you think that you've got something rock solid with someone. And, the difference between me and Pat was I had more time that I had created a relationship and a bond with Sunday. And that's, for people who don't know, that's who I'm talking about. Whereas he just had a few days. But there was some scenes that we saw between he and Carl where I think Carl was using the I'm a hardworking kind of guy to get on Pat's good side and to really create a bond with Pat. Like, we're two hardworking men and, you know, we've got that in common. And also their fathers and their families are very important to them. I think Carl used all of that to make Pat believe that there was this bond here. But really, I think Pat, as we saw, didn't really understand the rest of what was happening. And I think Carl was creating bonds with other people, understanding we got to get a shelter built. And this guy is building the shelter. So I'm going to do everything I can to make him feel like he's one of us. He's with us. But really, as soon as the shelter's done, he's got to go. You know, and so, and I think that's just, I think that's Carl understanding the game as a whole, whereas I think Pat was understanding the situation that presented itself at that moment.
Yeah. And, you know, we saw the various things going on. And the other thing is, though, after his injury, nobody with a heart was going to come forward and say, well, actually, I was lying to Pat and I was planning to backstab him in the first tribal council.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I even feel a little bit bad talking about it now, mm-hmm. but that's the job we're here to do.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is I really do. I think Pat was doing exceptionally well utilizing what he had when he was out there. I mean, he is someone who he says, I swing a hammer every day and this is what he does. And so he was playing to his strengths, but we also heard people talk about Pat before the game even started and how he was the one in Ponderosa that was very loud, very kind of showy, singing, you know, I think he was drumming on the table, like talking when he wasn't supposed to be talking. And this was something we talked about as being an issue, that if you're kind of putting yourself at the forefront in Ponderosa, it's going to be hard for that person to reel it in once they get out on the island, which is exactly what ended up happening. He didn't know enough to look at his personality and go, this could come across a little strong. Some of the comments he made, I don't know who he was calling or what he was calling a dirty bitch, excuse my language, but you know, that's one of those things that you shouldn't necessarily be saying in a group of 10 new people that you've just met and you're making references to, you know, sweating like a nun who's pregnant. You know, I mean, just things that could make someone go, hey, what? Which is exactly what I believe Nick talked about, you know, that there were some comments that were being made that might rub people the wrong way. I think it was Nick who talked about it in confessional.
Well, lots of people talked about it. I was going to wait until the fifth rule for that, but let's go ahead. And I do want to get back to something in the first rule. But let's jump ahead to that since you've already brought it up, because the fifth rule discusses how players have to pretend to be nice and play the social game. And I think it's the area where Pat had the biggest problem. And really, Jeff Probst thought it would be the biggest problem ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
Explaining first one out that he thought Pat and Natalie would both have a problem blending in. And, you know, one thing that he could have done differently was the tone he was taking, the way he was giving orders. I guess that's at least two things. And, you know, these were not providing a good first impression to his tribe mates, along with the off-color jokes that you've already mentioned. And we saw people complaining about both of them.
Yes. And that's definitely a situation where I think people go out there and they're like, I'm going to play the game exactly the way that I am, which is, unfortunately, you brought up Natalie, and that's what Natalie is doing. She's playing the game exactly the way that she is. But you have to put certain parts of yourself in check when you play that game, because if you go out there and you are too headstrong and you are barking orders like he was doing, even if your intentions are good, like he did talk about in many of his exit interviews, that, well, I can't go out and get material while I'm building the shelter because it's all in my head. And so I need the material to build the shelter, but I've got to send other people to do it. There's just a different way to present that to someone, as opposed to, you know, Christian, get out there and go get what I need. It comes across as a little strong. And, you know, the one thing that you definitely don't want to be perceived in those first couple of days is as being too strong. You want to spend more time kind of watching and observing and being involved, helping out, but not running the show is exactly what I think was being perceived, even if his intentions were all good.
Yeah, I mean, he even said in interviews that in the moment, he wasn't thinking about how his tribe mates were going to perceive him taking charge. But you always have to think about how your actions are going to be perceived by others on Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 100%. It doesn't matter It could be something as simple as, you know, the way that I mean, the silly things, the way that you lay in the shelter might offend somebody because you're taking up more space than you think you should. You know, I mean, every little thing really starts to play on people's emotions out there. I mean, the first night that we were in the torrential rain and we were huddled, like I've said, like little kittens, you know, in this makeshift shelter that was horrifying. Every little thing that you did had the potential of really annoying somebody who was sitting there because you were just, you're just grouped up in this and you're wet and you're cold and you're miserable. So you really have to be mindful of how something so little can set somebody off. And in something, you know, some mild comment that you don't really think much of could really bother someone because they're already moody because they didn't get any sleep and they're freezing cold and their hands hurt because they're all like, you know, too wet. And, you know, I don't even know what you would call that, but you get right. the pruny fingers. So you just, yeah. there's all kinds of things going on. So it's, you just always have to be mindful of that. And again, it's hard because you're all going through that together. You're all suffering.
Right. And in Pat's interviews, he mentioned that he didn't really know anyone was upset by the way he was telling others what to do and making the off-color jokes. And he told Mike Bloom, it kind of stunned him watching because he thought everyone was happy. And yes. this circles right back around to the other part of rule one that I kind of left hanging there, which was Pat said Nick was the one who was getting voted out if they had gone to tribal council and said Nick's name was the only one out there. And okay, so that's what he heard. And, you know, after the conversation that we talked about with Carl saying he would target Pat, we did, you know, see Carl fist bump Pat and say Nick was his number one choice to vote out. But let's face it, how often does it happen that there's literally only one name being discussed?
Yeah, especially, it never happens.
Right, especially when we saw a video of Pat's name being brought up.
Yeah.
His name was out there. He just didn't know it because the others weren't telling him, mm-hmm. which is the same that he didn't know that he was offending people or annoying them.
Right.
It's, you know, the thing is, if he really had a solid five, they would have told him that his name was out there.
Yes.
Except, you know, except several of them were the ones putting his name out there.
Yes. Yes. And that's what makes this all. It's, I mean, and listen, we already mentioned it. I suffered the same exact, you know, blinders on, you know, idea where you don't see what's happening on the other side. And this is just a perfect example of that, where his, you know, core five, and I'm using air quotes when I say that, did a good job of keeping him out of the loop, you know, because what did they get out of him? They got a hell of a shelter. I mean, did you see that thing?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so for them, kudos to them because they got what they needed. They got the shelter built and it's an incredible looking shelter. So as far as them utilizing Pat to their benefit, they did a really great job by not only getting that work labor out of him, but then also keeping him out of the loop as far as the potential that he could be the one going home.
Yeah. I think what this all tells me, when you combine what we learned in the first rule, what we learned in the fifth rule, is that he didn't have a solid feel for where he truly stood. If he didn't know people were upset about the way he was talking and the jokes he were making, he also might not have known that those topics and maybe others were leading people to potentially vote him out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's, you know, kind of the interrelationship between the first rule and the fifth rule there. But now we'll go back and we'll very briefly hit the second rule because, and I say briefly because it talks about how players need to avoid scheming and plotting too much. And I think that was not a problem here.
Yeah, I don't think it was either. And I think that Pat really was looking at this game in a way that it fits Pat's personality, where he's just a hardworking guy who wants to have other people around him who work hard. And in his mind, Nick wasn't. So Nick's got to go. So it was a very, right, like, very simple idea and a very simple way to look at the game of Survivor. So I think that shows that he really wasn't scheming and plotting too much at all because of the simplicity at which he was picking the first person to vote out.
Right. So we can skip ahead to the third rule here, which tells players to be flexible. And I don't know that we got to see enough, but how do you think he did here?
Well, considering he had already, in his mind, tied himself to a core five, I don't think that he was necessarily had a good idea about being flexible. Because when you're first, yes, when you first hit the island and you and people start creating alliances, I think the one person we saw who seemed to be creating alliances with almost everybody was Nick. At least he just seemed to be kind of like running around making secret little alliances with, you know, two people here, two people there. And so that is an example of flexibility. But I feel like, you know, starting right off the bat saying this is our core five and this is our solid five, that in Pat's mind, he had locked himself into that group, even though it doesn't appear as if that group had locked themselves into that group. So as far as flexibility is concerned, not too much as far as flexibility is concerned.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I was going to say was normally when you're building a shelter, I know he wanted to take command and take the lead. You still got to listen to people.
Yes.
And, you know, that's part of flexibility. On the other hand, the storm was coming in. So there wasn't really a whole lot of time to have a, hey, let's have a committee meeting and decide how we're going to do this. So
yes.
I do give him, you know, some credit on that situation.
Yeah, no, I want him to build my next shelter. That's, you know, yeah. Let's do that.
We'll have a whole season of people who suffered injuries around boat rides, and you two will both come back.
Hey, you know what? We both have some pretty good stories, right? That seem to be unfinished. Yeah. So, and Pat doesn't live too far from me. I've already mentioned that too. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe we can be we can represent the 518.
All right, so we move to the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. I don't really think Pat had anything to worry about there at this point, especially since there hadn't even been a vote.
Right, and he kept making jokes. So.
Yes, yes, he did.
Yeah, I think we didn't see much, but we at least saw the jokes, plural. So, yeah, I don't think there was too much regarding emotion. Although, I mean, the fact that he's targeting Nick, I mean, arguably could be more of an emotional response to someone who doesn't have the same work ethic as he does.
Yeah, it could be, but I mean, you know, first vote, target anyone you can.
Oh yeah, that's true. I mean, they look for any reason to target them. So yeah.
All right, we already talked about the fifth rule, so we'll move to the sixth rule, which warns players against being too much of a threat. I don't think there was even a chance for this to come into play. So unless you have something to add, I think we can skip on ahead.
Yeah, no, we can skip on ahead.
All right. So the seventh rule talks about getting and playing idols and advantages. And while there was a big idol hunt at Goliath, we didn't see anything at David. But
yeah.
Pat did say in his interview with Rob that he was looking for idols, just not specifically going on an idol hunt. So I get, you know, when he was out and about, he was searching, but he wasn't going on walkabout like Mike was on the other tribe. So I guess good for him for keeping his eyes open, even if he didn't find anything.
Yeah, no, he was focused on building a shelter. But I think that Pat at least was handling it the right way. In the first few days, if you do want to go idol hunting, that's the best way to do it. Find an excuse for you to go out and get wood, get palm fronds, find bamboo, whatever, you know, coconuts. Coconuts is a great one. You know, I'm going to find coconuts and spend some time looking for idols. So yeah, I think that's the better way to do it, not the Mike White approach.
Yeah. So, all right. From there, we move into Appendix A, which is about keeping your end goal in mind when you're voting and whenever voting out the weak than the strong than the weak than the strong. And it probably took longer to explain that than to say, well, there wasn't a vote, so there was no chance for this appendix to come into play.
David, you're right.
Yeah.
Got to get that in there at least once.
Yes, yes. So, you know, with that, do you have any final thoughts about Pat?
I feel for Pat because to go through everything he did to get out there. I mean, this was really a wonderful opportunity for Pat. I mean, he is, as we saw, a true David. He was the reason why this season even existed, because he was the inspiration. And I think it's so sad to then see his end come this way when he's finally kind of broken out of that world that he finds himself in to experience this whole other this whole other part of the, I don't even know how to, the best way to describe it, but he'd never traveled anywhere. He's finally like on a plane for the first time when he went to California for hit the, you know, finals. So all of those things to just kind of culminate to his 3 days turning into a medevac because of a boat ride. It's just, it's heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking.
Yeah. And, you know, before I get to my conclusion, speaking of heartbreaking, anyone who, you know, was listening to Pat talk, he talked before that boat ride about how they all shared a heart and, you know, an artery was going to be removed, but they would continue onward. And I just want to say, as someone who has had to learn a lot about arteries feeding hearts lately, you really can't keep going without an artery. So that, you know, don't go to Pat for your, you know, cardiac needs. Because when one artery is no longer pumping blood there, you got problems. Trust me on this one.
Yes. Poor Pat.
So, yeah. So in any case, yeah, Pat didn't have much of a chance to actually play Survivor. He was in the game for the first few days and he did some things right and others, well, not so much while he was out there. But as we know, the real test is tribal council, and he never got to take that test. That makes it very difficult to know for sure what would have happened. We saw people complaining about him, his off-color jokes, his bossiness, etc. And yes, he directed the building of the shelter and was a leader of sorts, but not necessarily in the best possible way. We also saw people complaining about Nick not doing work, but we didn't get a full picture of who was going to line up where, because we only saw a few isolated conversations, some of which were contradictory. Based on the information we have, including the interviews where he shifted who was in his solid five and admitted he didn't know there were conversations going on that were critical of him, I believe Pat was in trouble and might well have been the first one out, if even if they had gone to tribal council. But by no means can I say we absolutely know, because the fact is that we don't. What we do know is that before we could even get to the vote, Pat went out because of a boat. And that is why Pat lost.
You did a rhyme. I appreciate it, though. It was good.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, it's so, it's just, it's so sad. It's really sad. I feel for him. Because it would have been great to actually, I mean, I say it would have been great. Not that him going out first would have been great at all. But just to actually get almost some closure, because I feel like we have no closure right now, because we don't know what would have happened at tribal council, because it never happened.
So let me ask you this, as a former player. If you knew for sure that you were going to go out first, would you rather get voted out or be injured?
Oh, God. Well, see, I'm the wrong person to ask that question, because I almost got medevaced, and that's why I can feel for Pat. Because when all of that stuff was happening with my eyes, production didn't know what to do. And they were very concerned, because something like this had never really happened before. And I was so sick in my stomach, and I was so broken, and I was just so emotional and sad, because in my head, I didn't do all of this to go home in 3 days because of an eye infection. And I almost feel like I'd rather, even though getting voted out first would suck, I feel like at least you can say, okay, well, I played the game and clearly there were some things I did wrong, and you would at least know your place. Right now, Pat doesn't know his place. There is no closure, because he ended up going out the way that he did. And relating back to me again, not that I want to make this about me, but I kind of have the same thing, because I picked a rock. I didn't get voted out. I mean, I almost got voted out and I got saved, so that was great. But by not having that closure, like, I have no idea what my game would have turned into because I picked a rock. If I hadn't gotten the black rock and I had gotten a white rock and I'd stayed in the game, how would it have turned out for me? Where would I have been? I don't know, because it didn't happen. So there is something to be said about an actual vote, because when you look at the vote, you can try to figure out, what did I do wrong? Like, who did I upset? How did I upset this person? Why did this person vote the way that they did? What could I had changed about my game? My case, I should have picked a different freaking rock, you know? Pat's case, he should have sat in a different place on the boat. You know what I mean? And that's what makes it so frustrating, is because it's outside of your control. It's a little bit different, obviously, because I didn't flip and we went to rocks. If I had flipped, there would have been no rocks. If for Pat, I mean, it's this, it's just, it's one of those unknowns that he will have to spend the rest of his life wondering, like, what if we had gone to the first tribal council, would my five have been with me? What was I right? Or was I completely wrong and completely missed a read on everybody? And so that's got to be, that's, I think, the hardest part. I would rather, not that I want to be voted out of Survivor, because nobody wants to be voted out, but there is no closure when you have an ending like a medevac or picking a rock.
Yeah, that, I mean, all very good points. So I was interested in your perspective there and didn't even think about it with the, you know, idea of the rock draw too, but it all kind of comes together there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Pat and I have some good stories. We can, you know, unfinished business.
Unfinished business. Survivor, unfinished business.
it's the season that we can be on together.
That's right.
We have to get all Neil. Right. Neil needs to be in there, too. Who else do we have? We have some other medevac people.
There were several of them. So, all right. So as we move on from Pat, it's time to look ahead. So, you know, at the end of the first episode, we saw indications, and this is in the preview at the end, we saw indications that Natalie's relationships with her tribe get even worse, with her saying she's going to drop some Natalie napalm, and one of the women saying that Natalie is crazy. Meanwhile, on the David tribe, Elizabeth tells Lyrsa that her name is being thrown around while Christian takes on the leadership role. I'm not sure how much of any of that I buy. And unfortunately, the second preview only tells us that the storm gets worse, which is not terribly helpful.
Yeah.
So, you know, just based on my thoughts, which don't necessarily come a whole lot from the previews there, I think the Goliath tribe is going to lose the next immunity challenge, and it will come down to a choice between Natalie and Mike. Natalie is certainly the most obvious target right now, but you know, does that mean that she's going to get the boot? It's possible, but I'm going to stick to my pregame prediction that Mike is the first one out of Goliath.
Interesting. So here's what I want to have happen.
No, this isn't what I want. It's a prediction.
Listen, we know that I'm bad at predictions. So let me live in my own little fantasy world for a second, because I do think that we've learned enough from previews that they're not going to give us the person who's getting voted out on a silver platter. Like it's just not gonna
occasionally it does happen.
Occasionally. And we're like, okay, but I think it's too soon for them to be like, really like going, oh yeah, it's Natalie. Here you go. Like, this is Natalie napalm. So I don't think it's going to be Natalie, because that's boring. You know, like but this is what I really want to have happen. I do agree with you. I think the Goliaths are going to be the ones at tribal council. And this is what I'm interested in. I don't think we saw enough development on the Goliath tribe as far as relationships outside of Dan, and it was Natalia and Kara, his beautiful women that he was finding himself with. So those were the only, like, and then we did see Allison and Angelina bond as well. So those are the relationships that we really saw working. Now, in the preview you did mention, we saw Jeremy and Mike kind of going at it, and it sounded like Mike was not finding himself in a great place. But I do think that we are going to see a larger group for John Goliath. At least that's what I'm hoping for, is that we are going to find almost the, I hate to say it, but the older people versus the younger people, because that Dan, Natalia, and Kara threesome, I just don't see it doing well with other people on the tribe. I feel like it's going to bother them. And I do feel like Natalia's approach to the situation with Natalie is, again, not going to bode well for those older people on the tribe, because I think Natalia is suffering from the same thing Natalie is suffering from, and that's being too in your face and being too argumentative. And I think that she is going to end up putting herself pitted against Natalie in the next tribal council vote, and she's going to end up going home.
Wow, it's the Nat versus Nat vote.
That's what I feel. I just feel like that's going to happen. And if it does, it'll be exciting, but I'll be dying because Natalie's my winner pick.
Well, I'll be thinking of you as I watch it in New York. Of course, you'll be in New York also, just in a different part of New York.
I know. And you know what? I was telling myself, I'm like, I could get there because I'm not on trial next week. Interestingly enough, the judge did not schedule my trial.
So, for listeners who didn't hear last time, no, you are not actually on trial.
True.
You are the attorney.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am not in a bad situation. It's part of my job. So yes. I was like, I could get down there. I could get to know it all.
Yes.
I still don't think it's going to happen.
Well, if you do, it'll be a nice surprise.
It will be a very nice surprise. I would love to be able to pull it off. But with everything that's going on with, you know, work and life and just everything so busy, it'd be really, really hard for me to pull off. But I hope you all have a good time while you're down there without me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, as we wrap up here, I want to remind everyone about the RHAP patron program. You can head over to robhasawebsite.com/patron to help support all the RHAP podcasts and take a look at the various Patreon levels so you can find out what kinds of perks you can get, like joining the patron Facebook groups or finding out in advance about live events and getting first access and discounts for tickets, for example, to the event that is in a few days here. So, you know, Rob also does special podcasts and videos just for patrons, and there are a bunch of other perks too. So check out everything at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And of course, after you become a patron and get to the Facebook groups, please be sure and say hello to us there.
Yes.
Now it's time for a hashtag.
Hashtag.
And I don't know if you have any, but since you enjoyed my rhyme earlier, the only one I could think of was hashtag boat vote.
I think that's great. No vote, boat vote.
So, and of course, there is the hashtag for this podcast overall, which is YX Lost.
Yes. We have to do the hashtag International Podcasting Day, even though it'll be coming out tomorrow, probably. But we did record on International Podcasting Day.
Yeah, that is a really long hashtag, by
it
the
really
way.
It really is, because
Shorten that.
Yeah, if you try to put that in, you might run out of characters. So, but just know we are celebrating International Podcasting Day as well.
That's right. That's right. Also, everyone remember that if you use contact lenses, be sure to check out Simple Contacts at simplecontacts.com/survivor20 or enter the code survivor20 at checkout so you can save $30 on your lenses. Also, make sure you're ready for the season by subscribing to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the Reality TV Wrap Ups feed as well. Between these two places, you can find all the great content like Know It Alls, The Wiggle Room, The B&B, and much more. Besides talking to the two of us in the patron Facebook group, you can follow Jessica on Twitter at JessicaLewis89.
Yes.
And I am at David Bloomberg. Make sure to follow both of us to see the whole conversation throughout the week. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does all the editing on the Why Blank Lost podcasts. And thanks, as always, to Will from America for the theme song. Finally, of course, thanks to you, Jessica, for a great starting episode under less than ideal circumstances, both on the show and, as you know, while recording the podcast.
Yeah. Yes, we had a few hiccups, but no one will know that out there. The listeners will be able to appreciate that ourselves. But
that's
thank
right.
You.
They'll only know because, well, I tweeted about it and because they've made it this far into the podcast. So
yes.
Only our true dedicated fans will know.
Thank you so much all for listening. And a shout out to my mom, because she's definitely going to be listening. She loves our show. So if my mom loves it, you should love it too.
All right. So I'm looking forward to seeing many listeners in just a couple days in New York. And for everyone else, we'll be back here in a week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You lost survivor and you're feeling down. David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.